Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. We're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball, with the voice of the Cajuns, Jay Walker. How are you, Mr. Walker?
I don't even know if I'm going to pronounce this word right, but the late Dion Rainey, one time, they asked him how he felt, and it was toward the end of the season, and he used the term, and like I said, I don't know if I'm saying it right, it's ebullient, which you know, means like, you know, really good. And then after he hit the shot from the corner in the NIT to beat UAB, talked to him after the game, I said, "You still ebullient?" He said, "No, I'm better than that." So I'll use the word ebullient.
Ebullient. Now we're going to, during the commercial break, we'll look it up.
Yeah, and it might
pronounce it. We probably can't spell it.
And it might say horse's ass. I don't know.
You got to love things like that.
I'm feeling good. How's that? I'm feeling good.
I am too. You know, we're going to talk about the championship game in the second episode, second segment, but just quickly, you know, I had some friends over last night and we watched the game. It was so much fun. Had you synced up and I listened to the whole post game show. It was great, and I know you you had a little time to fill there.
Yeah, just a bit.
So,
but hey, it's all good. You know what? I want to give a shout out to Tom Perpetua. Tom is the new basketball SID. Well, he came up to me, I guess the night. Or while we were in Pensacola, I don't remember what night it was, and he said, you know, well, it was before the first game, and he said, you know, Jordan needs 13 rebounds to get to 500, and we've got some folks working in research, he said, I called ESPN and blah, 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 to see how many father-son duos have had 1,000 points and 500 rebounds. So just before the game starts, he texts me, and he says, okay, it's been done 4 times that we know of. And it was Bill and Luke Walton, Ralph Sampson and Ralph III, I think Ray Harper and Ray Jr., and Sean May and Scott May. And he said, so as far as we know, it's never happened with 2 players from the same school, father-son duo from the same school. So that was something that we talked about during the broadcast. When he got to, last night he needed 7. So when he got to 7, I mentioned it. So I got, you know, so I had that to work with and some other stuff that he had supplied with game notes and stuff. And boy, you never know when you're going to need stuff like that. And you know, after a while, it all starts to blur after you've been doing this for a long time. But he had a list. Now he couldn't list the 2 championships that were vacated, because you can't do that. I mean, they're vacated. They never happened.
I was there.
I got a piece of the net from both of them, but they never happened. You know, this is the 7th championship that the Cajuns have won, 7th Sun Belt championship. In 1992, they were the co-champions, but they were the 2 seed. In 1994, they were the 2 seed. In 2000, they were the 2 seed. In 2004, they were seeded by divisions, and the Cajuns were number 1 in the West and just rolled through the tournament, and they had the best overall record during the season, so they were a 1 seed. 2005, they did a divisions again. The Cajuns were number 2 in the West and won it, and then the Cajuns win it as a 3 seed in New Orleans in 2014. And then they win it as a 2 seed last night. 32 years in the Sun Belt Conference, the Cajuns have been a 1 seed twice. Twice in 32 years. So, you know, as time goes on and you know, fans get older and a new group of fans comes in, it's like it's not happening fast enough. You know, and you know, that's part of our microwave, I want it and I want it now society. Twice in 32 years, the Cajuns were a number 1 seed.
You know, I am guilty of that at times.
Sure.
Maybe not as much now as I'm getting older because I have mellowed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was one of the guys calling for Marty's head back in the day. And then that was the last time we won a NCAA tournament game. So
you know what Marty Fletcher's biggest problem? Well, he had two. Okay, first of all, he was not a public relations guy, and you know, I think Cynthia probably rubbed some people the wrong way. I get that. But the biggest problem he had is he wasn't Bobby Pascal. You know, Bobby Pascal was so beloved by the fan base. And one thing that his teams could do was defend. Well, Marty's teams were never known as being defensive teams. And I think, you know, before they won that championship, and it was, what, in his fourth or fifth year, it was like, yeah, I don't like the style of ball that we're playing. We're just, you know, running up and down the floor and shooting the basketball. And but Marty always had shooters. And because he had shooters, he could win a couple of championships, and he did. And that 92 team that won a game in the NCAA tournament was probably the deepest team because he went eight deep. And he had Michael Allen and Byron Starks and Tony Moore and Todd Hill and Cedric Maquion and Marcus Stokes and Carol Boudreaux. That's a pretty good team right there. And, you know, gosh, I don't know if we had a team that talented until much later on. It was a very, very good team. So, yeah, but so I got it, got why they didn't like Marty all that much, because they really didn't like the style of play. Because, like I said, Bobby Pascal was and is beloved by Cajun fans. And he wasn't Bobby Pascal. He didn't coach like Bobby Pascal.
And that might have been mine too, because I grew up at a time, I guess, high school when with the days of Andrew Toney, Kevin Figaro, Bobby Pascal, those guys like that, Wayne Julian. So it's kind of one of those things. And you come along with Marty Fletcher, but I don't think we realize, you know, you mentioned the team with Boudreaux, but you know, Kevin Brooks, Todd Hill, Byron Starks,
Sidney Grider. He always had multiple guys who could shoot the basketball. That's what he was known for. And you can't, in the entire time that he was there, you can't, outside of maybe the first year, you can't find a year where you looked at the roster and said, wow, they don't have anybody who can shoot. He always had shooters, and usually more than one. You know, he thought 90 points a game is what you need to do, and thought the fans would like that.
Well, you saw that a lot with, and I don't know, this may have been a little bit later, with Loyola Marymount. That was probably with the same time that Jesse Evans was here, I think.
It was right about the time that Jesse started, all right, because I remember, gosh, I think Marty still might have been the head coach. And we went out to Loyola Marymount to play. They were going to return the trip. And I think it was Marty's last year. So we go out there, and they got a guy named John Olive who's coaching because Westhead's gone. And the game was in the 50s. Yet, when they came the following year, I remember doing a promo about the schedule, and that they have this, 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 and running, gunning Loyola Marymount. And we had a record crowd at the Cajun Dome, which... I don't remember if that was Marty's last year or Jesse's first. Okay, I just don't recall. But yeah, I thought Marty's teams were a lot of fun to watch, but that was just me.
Well, I can tell you the game against Oklahoma in 92 or 94.
92.
I can tell you I still have the videotape on VCR tape, I'm converting it to a DVD as soon as I get off my butt, but it's, I watched the game about a year ago or so because I found the VCR tape and I'm like, let me see if it still plays. So I put it in and I watched the last half. I knew we won the game, but I was so nervous in that NCAA tournament game.
When they had the 20th anniversary in 2012, and they had it out at the Schilling Shack, but it was like temperatures were in the 20s. And this huge cold front had come in, but they had it on the indoor part of the place, and we were watching it in something that I did not remember. We didn't have a field goal in the last 5 minutes. Tony Moore hit a three-pointer to put us up five as the 45-second shot clock was expiring, with about 4.5 minutes left. That was our last field goal. We went 12 for 12 from the free throw line to close it out.
Wow. I did not. You and I talked about this a year or so ago, right after I'd watched it, because I had told you that. And I remember now that you told me that. That's it's funny how time will play tricks with your memory.
Sure.
So.
Sure. That fish gets bigger all the time, you know. You caught it, and it was a little 3-inch perch, and you know, before you know it, it's an 8-pound bass. But no, I just found it interesting last night about we've only won the tournament as a one seed once, and we have only been a one seed twice. But we've never won it if we were lower than a 3, and we won it as a 3 once. And the rest of the time we were all 2 seeds.
You bring that up, and we think about I'm gonna switch gears a little bit here, but to baseball, you know, I don't think we ever won the Sun Belt Conference tournament when we hosted it here.
No, you're right.
But we won, I think now after last year, 5 of them in the state of Alabama. 1 at Troy, I think 3 at South Alabama, and now 1 in Montgomery. So,
nice.
I was very happy when they said we were going to Alabama for the. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. Again, we think, you know, we host it, we get to, you know, win it. But we've been, you know, and there was a year we hosted in baseball that we didn't make the tournament.
Don't I remember? I think now, I saw a statistic, and I think it's right. It's now 8 out of the last 11 years that the number one seed has not won the Sun Belt tournament.
Very interesting.
You know, and now I'm going to shift gears. We're going to talk about this year for a minute.
Okay, go for it.
The Cajuns did not win the regular season. They were 1 game out of first place. So they're playing for a championship last night as the 2 seed. They've got 25 wins. If they don't win that game last night, their season's over. Because I think it's very doubtful that they would have gotten an at-large NIT bid because they don't give very many to mid-majors anymore. And I was thinking about that today, and I was going, man, this is just crazy. And we go back to the regular season, all right? And the day that we play South Alabama, I'm out in the parking lot, and here comes Dr. Maggard, and we're talking. And he starts talking about, he said, you know, we need to win. The other two teams need to lose. He said, I don't think Southern Miss is going to lose at Texas State. Marshall might lose. And then he starts railing about the loss at Coastal Carolina, which was the first conference game. And he said, that's going to cost us the regular season championship. So I go to lunch, and I get my food, and I look, Mike Murphy is sitting there. So I go down, and the first thing out of his mouth is, freaking Coastal Carolina. And then I started thinking about it, and I've talked about this, with Murph last night, and again with a couple of interviews I've done. Winning's hard. People think it's easy to win. I got news for you. It's hard to win because not only are you, you know, do you have to navigate your schedule, but you are at the mercy of the schedule makers to an extent. Let's play make-believe. The Cajuns opened at Coastal Carolina at Old Dominion. Suppose they had opened at James Madison at Old Dominion and lost both games. And then, the weekend before the regular season ends, now you're going to play Coastal Carolina instead of James Madison. Do you honestly think the Cajuns would have lost that game to Coastal Carolina? I guarantee you they would not have lost it. So, the way the schedule fell, as it turned out, and the conference schedule is something you have no control over, sometimes timing is everything, right? And I'm not blaming the schedule. I'm just saying timing's everything. And so we're there, and that's costing us the regular season championship. And then I'm sitting there last night, I'm saying, you know, it's a 25-win team. And if we don't win tonight, our season is probably over. Now, if you finish 4th, 5th, 6th every year in the Southeastern Conference, your coach is making millions of dollars, and you're sitting there talking about what your seed is going to be. In the Sun Belt Conference, you finish 4th, 5th, and 6th every year, you're getting fired. Winning's hard, and it is especially hard in mid-major one-bid leagues because you've got to navigate 8, 9, 10, in our case, 13 schools to try to get to the top. And it's just not an easy thing to do. And I think it has something, the fact that winning's hard is why we've been the one seed twice in 32 years. And now we won, five championships as the two seed. And there were also probably a couple, three times, and during the Western Kentucky, Chris Marcus and Michael Southall days, the Cajuns may have lost as the two seed a couple, three times. But it's hard to win. It's hard to finish first or second because I just gave you 7, 8, maybe 9 times in 32 years where you're the number one or the number two seed. You know, fans want it to be that way all the time. That's just not reasonable.
You know, you brought up the point about the season being over. And I'm glad you didn't say it last night because if you did, I didn't hear
it. No, I didn't say it.
Because I remember 2014, going back to baseball, sitting at my desk waiting for that last game on that Monday night against Ole Miss. And Jay Walker's on the radio going, and he goes, at the end of the night, one of these two teams' seasons will end abruptly. And it just made a chill go through my body. And if it would have happened again last night, it would have been deja vu all over again.
You know, the finality of tournament play is very difficult because it doesn't matter if you're talking about basketball or baseball,
right,
or softball or anything else. You're playing and playing and playing, and there comes a time, and you don't ever think it's going to happen. You know, you don't ever go into tournament play, oh, we're going to get our ass kicked. You always think that you're going to play again the next day. When your season ends, it ends very abruptly. And sometimes it's like hitting a brick wall, especially if it's a game that you think you're going to win. It's just really hard when it's over.
And for the majority of the teams, your season ends with a loss.
That's right.
And no matter if you're number 5 in the country, if you don't win the national championship, your season ends with a loss.
Yeah.
So it's a tough... Point being, it's a tough business.
It's a tough business. It's just hard to win, man. Yeah. It's just hard to win. And, you know, I would love to go back, and maybe I will, and we can talk about this maybe at the beginning of next basketball season or whatever, just to stop and look in the Sun Belt Conference in 32 years, who's won the most championships? We're right up there. We're right up there. You know, Western Kentucky had a great run, and they've been gone from the league now for a while, but they haven't won Conference USA since they left the Sun Belt. It's just hard to win. You know, Little Rock, a few years ago, they win 30, and then the next year they finish last. Another time they went to they won the tournament, and then the next year they finish last.
Well, let's talk about something less depressing now.
Oh, you like last night's game?
No, we're going to go. I want to go back to Georgia Southern game first. Not long. I want to talk about the first two games, take a little break, and then we'll talk about the championship game. But you're listening to We're Talking. We're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball, voice of the Cajuns, Jay Walker. The Georgia Southern game, we're up by 15 and a half. But we come out in the second half, and we actually outscore them, which a lot of times we have not done when we've had a big lead in the first half. We've won the game, but we always haven't outscored. Usually we're outscored 5, 6, 7, So that to me was a positive from the very start, talking about the first game.
Yeah, I think they got it down to 12 was the closest they got it. Never got it back into single digits. And, yeah, the Cajuns, you know, I thought they pretty much dominated that game. Savrasov did play, and he wound up leading them in scoring.
Played well, but you can tell he wasn't himself.
Right, he wasn't 100%. But, you know, there have been times this year, and all you've got to do is look at statistics. There have been times this year, in fact, the first half last night was one of them, when the Cajuns haven't defended very well. You know, they gave Georgia Southern 72% when they trailed by 19 at halftime. But I got to tell you, I thought during this tournament, the Cajuns were as good as defensively as they have been all year long. Now, at one time, South Alabama was shooting 72% in the first half, but it was down to 62 by halftime. So they had already started to figure it out. And then they held them to 30-something percent in the second half. This championship, I think, was won on defense. I really do. And although statistically you look at, well, you know, they're, you know, last in three-point percentage defense and they're done. When they've needed to play defense, they've gone out and played.
Well, a prime example of that is Georgia Southern was held to 1-for-15 from the three-point line. And one of my buddies kept saying, oh, we're giving up easy layups. I said, I'd rather trade two than let them hit a three, you know.
Yeah, was it Wilo Colon, who was a women's basketball coach, says, you shoot the two, I shoot the three, I win. And that's basically true. Because one out of three from three.
But at the same time, I think it fans, and I'm in this myself. I'm not trying to disparage anyone. But, you know, we outscored points in the paint 32-26. So you take that into consideration, and then we make five threes. They only make one. That's a recipe for a win.
Yes, it is.
But here's the stat, though, that I don't
think. All right, here's the, ladies and gentlemen, with the stat.
Here's, also. It's real, I mean, I guess it is a stat, but not really like you, it's stat as you think in free throw percentage or anything like that. But Jordan Brown, 32 minutes. Terrence Lewis, 20 minutes. Greg Williams, 28 minutes. Themis Fox, 22 minutes. Garnett, 9 minutes. We had an opportunity to rest our starters through that.
Well, you know, it's one of the and Bob and I talked about this a lot during the year. This is a deep basketball team. You know, Jordan and Themis, I guess, were the two longest minute, but they weren't even in the top 10 in the league in minutes played. And if you look, Marshall, Kinsey, and Taylor, and the third guard, and Handlogged, well, the three guards are playing 36, 38, 39 minutes a game. And Handlogden's probably at about 34. And if you look at South Alabama going into last night, four of their five starters were well into 34 minutes plus as far as the amount of time that they played. And last night, they had one guy play 5 minutes, and the other six guys played the rest of the game.
I didn't look. Interesting. But you know, you look, Jalen Dalcourt comes off the bench, 25 minutes. Michael Thomas, 19. Joe Charles, 19. Kobe Julian, 15. Isaiah Richards, 9. Even Chancellor White got in that game. It was late, but still, every one of those, that 2 minutes that he was able to give to one of the starters, or even the second team guys, is precious.
Yeah.
When you're playing three nights in a row.
True.
So, all right, anything else about Georgia Southern that you thought was, I know we're kind of going back a little ways, but.
No.
I thought it was a good 18-point victory by the Cajuns. We played well, I think, offensive and defensively. And I think the more talented team won.
Danny Reed texted me after the game. He said, you're going to win it. And I didn't disagree with him. You know, even 2017, 2018, pardon me, I don't think I went into that thing saying, we're going to win this tournament. I went to Pensacola believing we were going to win this tournament. I just felt it. And, you know, I didn't know if we were going to have to beat Georgia Southern, then Marshall, then Southern Miss, or somebody else. And, but I'll say this, I don't think it mattered.
I don't think it mattered either.
Look, the matchup with Marshall, Marshall does not match up well with the Cajuns. Cajuns are too physical inside, and they can guard a little bit on the perimeter. And so for Marshall, that's a bad matchup. And look, Southern Miss beat the Cajuns in Hattiesburg. Cajuns beat them in Lafayette. I just think the Cajuns had a better team. It was just my feeling.
I concur. Let's move on to Texas State game. This was a game that gave me a little bit of pause, even though the Cajuns had beat them twice in the regular season. And I'm not one of those that thinks it's difficult to beat a team three times in a season. I disagree with that because, you know, you played them once over there, you played them once at home. Now, the game was closer.
Now, I asked Coach Marlin about that before the South Alabama game. I said, okay, you know, there's this old adage that it's hard to beat a team three times. I said, do you believe that? He said, it depends on what position I'm in. I said, if last year, I would say, no, that's, you know, it is hard to beat a team three times. We're going to win, and then we didn't. He said, I'm on the opposite side of that. There was some research done, though, and it's been quite a few years now, about this three times, and the team that wins the first two wins the third one 70% of the time.
I think that's one of those made-up stats that I like
to make up. Well, and it's because every time that it happens,
it's magnified.
Exactly.
So, and this was a game, too, that my friends got frustrated with, and I think this time they had good pause too. 34 points in the paint by Texas State, which I thought was way too many, because if they started hitting from the outside, and they outscored us in the paint 34-30, but at the same time, I wasn't worried.
Texas State, down the stretch, was taking about 6 three-pointers a game. I mean, they just don't shoot the three. They just don't. Bob and I talked about this before the game. Texas State is one of the teams in the league that can rebound with the Cajuns. Miller and Nigel Caesar, and then the third guy who starts, because Caesar comes off the bench, those guys can rebound the basketball pretty good. And so I'm not surprised that they had the lead points in the paint, not shocked, because that's where most of their points come from.
Yeah, and I think we look at it as fans, again, I think it comes to that we see the deficiency on the defensive end, and I don't want to use, that's probably a bad word, but we don't notice every time we do it, and they're going like, well, if we should stop them every time, they should stop us every time. We both have athletes on both sides, both have guys on scholarships. I mean, sometimes it's not the athlete on the floor, it could be the coaching staff. There's many factors. So
always,
I think we sometimes we can make too big of a deal of what happens during the game on one specific area or one statistic when it's a game of many statistics. So, but let's take a quick break. We'll pour a bourbon, another bourbon, and we'll come back and talk championship basketball. You're listening to We're Talking Basketball, Raging Cajun Basketball, with the voice of the Cajuns, Jay Walker. Welcome back in to We're Talking Basketball, Raging Cajun Basketball, with Voice of the Cajuns, Jay Walker. Jay, before we get started back again, have you had a chance to taste, we've got a little Heaven's Door, which is overpriced probably because they're using Bob Dylan's name.
Right.
But it's actually very good.
It's a good bourbon.
So
solid.
Very solid. And I like the fact that they call it a bourbon, even though it's from Tennessee, which means they did not charcoal mellow it. They left that final step out, which is required to become Tennessee whiskey. So just a little food for thought there. Or drink.
Or drink. Cheers.
Cheers. Put some down my throat and we have silence. All right, championship game. Monday night. You got to wait all around all day. You're not at the team hotel, so you can't see what they're doing. What was your day like?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. Now, before each game, when it was time for the team's pregame meal, which was 4 hours before tip, I went to the team hotel and I interviewed Coach Marlin for pregame because I knew it, getting him at the locker room at the arena was going to be very, very difficult. So we made that plan ahead of time. Well, it was a 6 o'clock game, so I set up the interview for 1:45. And I did some stuff on the computer. I did read some more of the game notes, made a few notes, and then when it was time, I got in the car. I drove over to the team hotel, which is about 15, 20 minutes away, and about closer to 25. And coach showed up on time. We recorded. And, you know, we weren't playing until 6 o'clock, but I said, you know what, that parking lot right in front of the Bay Center, where they've got a lot of reserved parking, sometimes they let, you know, people come in that are paying customers, and there was one time we went and the parking lot was full, and they wanted to make me park a good ways away from the arena, and right about that time, Dr. Kathy Keene, who's the senior associate commissioner, she happened to be there, and she told them, she says, look, I'm going to park him by our truck. So he right by the TV truck that was being used. So that was very kind of her. And so I didn't want to go through that again. So I said, I'm going to go to the women's game. So I did. And the game started at 1. It was beginning of the fourth quarter when I got there. And James Madison was just hammering Texas State. So I watched the end of that. And then I went and had a piece of pie. In the media room.
What kind?
Pumpkin.
You know, I always grimace when somebody says pumpkin pie.
It might have been sweet potato. They taste alike.
But once I have it, I'm going like, this is pretty good. I need to have it again.
But I had that with a cup of coffee. And then I went and set up equipment. And, of course, South Alabama, as it turned out, South Alabama was sitting right next to me. JT Crabtree, and so we got a chance to visit, you know, and before the semifinal game, I went behind him, and I rubbed his shoulders, okay? Well, I forgot he always has that GoPro pointed at him, right? So he sends a group text and sends the video of me giving him a massage and says, do I get another massage? And I just texted back, no happy ending for you. And that was my way of saying, you're not going to win tonight, JT.
Oh. So, a rather long day, I guess.
It was a long day.
But it was worth it.
And look, the stats come up, right? And I've got a little stat monitor that they provide, and it's got everything. And some intern set it up because the abbreviation was LU.
I saw that.
Okay, so I texted Sam, who's the senior associate commissioner of the Sun Belt. And I said, Sam, look, it says this. I said, is there a way you can correct it? And he texted back. He said, yeah, I just saw it. He said, we'll take care of it. And a few minutes later, it was done.
I noticed it when it first came up, and I thought to myself, we've been called worse.
Yeah, but you know, it seems like when stuff like that happens, a lot of our fans think it's done on purpose.
Yeah.
Now, it's done on purpose with state schools.
Yes.
Okay, they're going to ULL us to death. But a lot of times it's because an intern didn't know any better, and that was the case last night.
Very good. So back to basketball. Before we get to basketball, you mentioned earlier talking about the father-son duo. ESPN actually had a graphic up during the game that showed that as well. So they did their research.
Tom gave him that.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah. Look, Tom's new. Tom's good.
Okay.
Tom's good. I also want to, since you brought it up, it's, you know, sometimes our graphic designers do stuff and you kind of get anesthetized because they're so good at what they do. And because of that, not everyone registers. But look, the graphic that they did of like father, like son, and it had Deion Brown with an action shot, and then Jordan. Man, I got chills when I saw that.
Yes. You know, we were, my friends that were over here last night, we were all in school from 82 to 86, some of us a little bit longer, me being one of them. But we all talked about that, remembering those guys that played in the early 80s.
Man, like father, like son. I got the free sauce when I saw that.
So.
And I don't know if it was Heather or who it was that did it, but props for getting that done. That one really excited me.
Let's talk basketball, though.
Okay.
So if I told you at the beginning of the game, not our game, but just any game, let's say a Sun Belt game, and there was a total of, there would only be a total of 9 fast break points in the game. Would you think that would be us in South Alabama?
No. No, that would surprise me a bunch. Yeah. Both teams. Well, you know, South Alabama, if they don't get out in transition right away, well, they're gonna get the ball to Isaiah Moore. And it's, you know, he doesn't just streak to the basket. He works his way there. And because of that, and because he's so good at getting to the rim, I don't think they try to run as much as maybe they have in the past. Cajuns, on the other hand, yes. But they didn't run that much either.
But typically, Riley likes to push the ball up the court.
Traditionally.
Yeah.
I don't think this year as much.
Okay.
If you go look and you look at the scores of their games, they had a lot of games in the 60s this year.
Okay.
Which is a little unusual for them.
Another thing, and we talked about it earlier, and this time, you know, Brown played 39 minutes, Faulks 36, but then, you know, Kentrell Garnett, I got to pronounce his name properly, 31, and Jalen Dalcourt in the second half played all 20 minutes, which I did not realize it until your interview with Jalen that he had played all 20 minutes. But, you know, our bench outscores them by 11, and I think it was a huge factor in this game.
Well, you know what? If you don't have a bench, you don't win the game, because Greg Williams couldn't go in the second half. Now, if you're a team that's playing 6 guys, you're going to lose. I mean, you're going to lose when you lose a guy like Greg Williams. But the Cajuns have a bench. And on any given night, somebody on the bench can step up and have a game. You know, Mike Thomas had a career-high 13 in one of the games, and Dalcourt was in double figures as well. And, you know, I was so happy for Jalen. Jalen is, and he even said it on social media, there were times during the season he got down on himself a lot because, you know, he wasn't shooting it well or wasn't performing. And then as a result, he wasn't playing as much. And he said, you know, I just get down on myself too much. So as a result, he had a great tournament the last 2 games. I mean, he was really, really good. And I was so happy for him, you know, because Jalen is probably the most outgoing, gregarious guy on the team. He, you know, some guys, you put a microphone in front of them and they kind of clam up a little bit. No. He doesn't.
He's grabbing the microphone.
Oh, yeah. There's not an S, an H, and a Y in his alphabet. And I was so glad for him. And, you know, both of those guys, you know, talked about, him and Greg talked about what it meant to be from Lafayette and bring a championship. And that it was something that, look, they're going to remember that the rest of their lives.
But all of those guys, their parents, Joe Charles's parents, I mean, they were so proud to be from the Lafayette area.
Oh, yeah.
And playing for the Cajuns.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it was fun.
I got to know Big Joe a little bit this season. And let me tell you, I'm a fan. Okay?
I am too.
I'm a fan of Karen Crow Joe, but I'm a fan of Big Joe too. And, you know, what has happened is, you know, he's on social media a lot.
Yes.
But what he's done is he's preached this family thing. So he started going to baseball games. He's already promised he's going to go to volleyball games in the fall. You know, he's going to go to football games. He is going to support the university sports teams because, as he put it, we're a family. And that's something that this year he's just blossomed as a fan. And, you know, he's happy for the support that the university gives and that the fans give. His way of giving back is, I'm going to support all the teams. That's big time.
You see it, though. Coach Marlin will go to basketball games. Coach Murphy, I've seen him at softball, and he'll come sit with me sometimes.
Marlin goes to basketball games? Really?
Baseball games, I'm sorry. Yeah, he goes to basketball games every now and then. but, you know, I think, and Coach Gray, you see her.
You see her everywhere.
Everywhere. I think that starts at the top with Dr. Maggart, because I was joking with him one day. I was at a baseball game, I think it was, and I said, didn't I just see you on TV at the women's basketball game? And he's like, yeah. And then before I could say anything, you know, we were watching, then we go to the Cajun Dome for men's basketball after the baseball game, and there he is, him and Carrie. I think it starts with the top.
Sure it does. Sure it does.
So,
I just love how Big Joe blossomed this year because the fan base has embraced his son.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you could hear it on the TV, them chanting Karen Crow Joe.
Karen Crow Joe, yeah. What a great nickname, huh?
So, all right, back to basketball now that we've got on our soapbox. South Alabama comes out and shoots 73% or 72.6 or whatever it was. And you're thinking to yourself, the Cajuns aren't really, they're not really down, I guess. I mean, they're not ahead in the game, but at the same time, you're thinking to yourself, this can't continue.
72% got you a 19-point deficit at the Cajun Dome against Georgia Southern. Okay. And their lead was about, I don't know, 7 or 8. Okay, when they were at 73%. And then the Cajuns squeezed them a little bit in the final few minutes. They got it down to 62, and they got it down to a 4-point deficit. My attitude is we're going to win the game. You know, because first of all, we were behind at halftime in all three games against South Alabama.
Okay.
And I think in those games, and look, whoever had the scout for all three games. And whoever it is, along with the rest of the coaching staff, I thought their halftime adjustments were very good in all three of the games. So what do? They hold them down to 34% shooting in the second half. They don't get a field goal the last 6 minutes of the game. And guess what? You know, get a pair of scissors. We're cutting nets down.
It's been the key of this team all season long, though, is the first 4 to 5 minutes of the second half. I said we don't need to take the lead, but we have to cut into their lead.
Or you just have to play them even.
Yes.
What you can't let the team do
separate
is start to get separation if you're behind at halftime, because now instead of 4, now you're down 10.
In 30 seconds after the first media timeout of the second half, the lead is 2.
Yeah.
And that's when I felt comfortable that our guys were going to pull it through.
Yeah, I honestly thought, as you know, we got a 6-point lead down the stretch, and I honestly thought we were headed for a double-digit win, but we had a couple of three very ill-advised turnovers, and that enabled them to stay close. But Craig, I'm going to tell you, you know, even when we were down in the first half, at halftime, and then when the lead got tenuous, I never thought we were going to lose that game. I never thought we would lose.
We had a little stretch there of about 3.5 minutes, maybe 4, that we didn't score a field goal. We scored some free throws, and the same thing. They did not, like you mentioned, the last 6 minutes of the game, score a field goal. So, you know, and I think the key And I know everybody's going to say, well, Isaiah Moore scored 33 points. But yeah, but it was 33 and the next guy was 12, where we have 23, 13, 12, 13. You can't double-team Brown when Jalen Dalcourt's hitting him. You can't double-team Jalen when Michael Thomas is going to hit a shot.
Well, the interesting thing about the game plan, and they knew, okay, because Kevin Samuel tried to play Jordan Brown one-on-one in the second game. He didn't play in the first game. And Jordan, you know, made him his own personal rag toy, okay? So you knew that they were going to double him. You knew. But they had a game plan for it. And so what you saw them do was you saw Themis kind of head down that way. They get the Jordan, and then Themis's guy would go to do the double. Well, when you double-team somebody, guess what? Somebody's open. And they told Themis before the game, we're going to need you to score the basketball tonight. And the game plan worked. He got a career-high 23. He hit three threes in the game. I just thought he had a hell of a game on a night that we needed for him to have a hell of a game.
But they have done that all season long. And as the season has progressed, and it's coaching and it's scouting reports, but at the same time, the players still have to execute it.
Sure.
And Jordan Brown has done a good job of recognizing the double team down the stretch.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, after the semifinals, there was something on social media, and it was Themis saying, who the MVP? 21 the MVP. No, 21 player of the year. 21 player of the year.
Yes,
I don't care what they say. 21 player of the year. You know, I'm not going to sit here and argue who should have won the Player of the Year award in the Sun Belt Conference, because that would be disrespectful to Tavion Kinsey, who's a hell of a player.
Yes.
But when all of that came down, my thought was, you know what? If Jordan Brown wins the most outstanding player in the conference tournament,
and nobody cares,
including Jordan Brown.
Exactly.
Okay? Because it means his team is going to the NCAA tournament. So that was a pretty good trade.
Looking back, and I guess when I say this, I'm talking about recognition as far as the Sun Belt itself. And sometimes it's because he doesn't score a lot. But is Themis Faulks the most underrated player on this team?
Yeah. No, he really is.
No all-conference team, no all-tournament team.
No.
Without him, we're not there.
Oh, absolutely. You're correct. I agree with you. I don't know if you saw it, okay? When Themis Faulks was signed, there were a couple of Cajun fans that made some very disparaging comments about the fact that he had played at South Carolina State before he went to JUCO, and that his numbers weren't good. And he said, oh, this guy's going to be our point guard. And, you know, and I can tell you who the guys are, but I'm not going to, because I'm not going to give him the publicity. Well, Themis went ahead and took those comments, screenshot them, put them on social media with his numbers from the game in the championship game. And I said, you go, Themis! Because let me tell you, you know, and this is true of all these guys. These are all such great guys. And Themis is right up there with any of them. And he's a guy who smiles all the time, who plays hard all the time. And yes, he was probably the most underappreciated player on the Cajuns team. Now, a lot of the fans appreciated him, but at the end of the day, Jordan Brown and Greg Williams got all of the awards, and deservedly so.
Yes.
Now, you could have made a case for Themis for the all-tournament team because of the game that he had last night. But he also had a game where he had 5 turnovers.
Mm.
And Terrence Lewis was pretty consistent in the 3 games. So not surprised that that happened. But no, let me tell you. Point guard was an issue for the Cajuns last year. Mike Thomas wasn't quite ready. He was much better this year in that backup role.
But is that because of Themis' faults?
That's what I don't know.
I mean, I think they push each other out.
Well, probably so, but I also think the kid's a year older.
Yes.
Right? And he's got a year more coaching. But, no, you know, without Themis coming in, leading the league in assists, and look, he found a lot of open guys for three-pointers. He found Jordan a lot for baskets. No, we don't win this thing without him. I don't know if we come close to winning this thing without him. I can guarantee you we're not a top two seed without him. Guarantee you that.
I can tell you it's fun watching the young man play, and I think another player, Terrence Lewis, the second you brought up, as well. Or I think there were a lot of people. I think we were his fourth team, and last year was at Jackson State. You know, didn't start till midway through the season. Really didn't put up great numbers. But he has proved that he belonged here this year.
Tell you a little story. You read the story about Mark Adams over at Texas Tech. All right, Mark Adams, once coach at UT Pan American, got the job. Chris Beard hired him at Little Rock because the guy knew defense, went with him out to Texas Tech, and Beard gets the job at Texas. Mark Adams, the head coach. They have a good first year, not so good second year. He says that he read the team scripture about masters and servants, and that one of the players was offended by that. Well, he's been suspended. Now, he says he was just reading scripture. I wasn't there. I don't know. I do know this. Many times during his tenure at Louisiana, Tony Robichaud talked about servant leadership, and he talked about it a lot. Team pulls up here this afternoon, 3 o'clock, at the APC. There's a little group, you know, some of the university employees, few fans, to welcome them back. Terrence Lewis is the last one off the bus because Terrence Lewis was in the back of the bus making sure the bus was clean. And he came out with any trash that was left. Nobody told him to do it. He didn't say, look, freshman, go do this. Here's a senior that goes and he makes sure the bus is clean. Folks, that's servant leadership. That's exactly what Tony Robichaud used to talk about. And that's why T. Lou, who doesn't talk a whole lot, okay? And sometimes he shuffles a little bit slowly, all right? But T. Lou's a leader by example. And he wanted to make sure the bus was clean so Jeremy wouldn't have to clean the bus.
And a shout out to Jeremy, who I absolutely love and adore.
Oh, no.
Whether it's basketball, baseball, or whatever trip he's on, always has a smile on his face and always makes you feel like you're the only one in the room.
You know, he brought just before the game started, he walked up to me before the game, he brought me a bottle of water. And I winked at him. But Jeremy and I, we kind of pick on each other a little bit. And I'm not going to get into the whole story, but every time we see each other, we look at each other and say, you need to go to bed. And
imagine Jeremy telling you that.
They had a wonderful man, a wonderful bus driver in Master in St. Julian, who passed away just a few months before Robe. Jeremy, from a personality standpoint, is not like him. But he's just as likable, just as lovable, just as respected by the teams that he drives.
I always joke with him.
And if anybody sees Jeremy and said I said something nice about him on this podcast.
Well, if you see him, you can tell him what I said.
Tell him that I said he needs to go to bed.
Whenever I see him, I always call him King Jeremy. And he goes, why do you call me King Jeremy? I said, have you ever heard the Pearl Jam song? I said, King Jeremy the Wicked. He goes, ah, I ain't wicked. I said, no, but I just love calling you King Jeremy. So.
No, he's a good guy.
I think we got to end it on that.
Well, we can. I do want to say this.
Go ahead.
All I could say after the game last night, and I shook hands with a lot of course, I hugged the entire team, but shook hands with a lot of people, hugged a lot of fans. And the only thing I could say was, I'm so happy. Not for me, because this ain't never been about me. But I was so happy for this team because it's the most special group of guys I have ever been around. A coaching staff that just worked their ass off, including two newcomers, two first-year guys. And then you've got Coach Zimmerman, who's only in his second year. And, of course, Coach Harden, Coach Murphy have been there longer than Methuselah. But Coach O, okay, Oliver Houston, the strength and conditioning coach. I all the way down to the managers, you know, they're just wonderful people. And I was so happy for them. I was probably happiest of all for Coach Marlin because I know how hard he works. He's a finalist again this year for the Skip Prosser Man of the Year. He's already won it once. He has been a servant leader as well. And I was on with Gus Kattengell today over on ESPN New Orleans. And I said, you know, you want to win, okay? You want to win every year. It's harder to win if Bob Marlin is your coach. Not because he's not as good a coach, because he's as good a coach as anybody. But you've got to be a certain type of young man to get recruited by the Cajuns to play for them. If there's something in your past that indicates you might bring personal shame upon the program, you're not going to get recruited by the Raging Cajuns. If there is something that the AAU coach, other AAU coaches say about that indicates that you're not going to be a team guy, but you might be a me guy, you're not going to get recruited to play for the Raging Cajuns. Now, you can recruit a bunch of really good basketball players that have a little outlaw to them, and some of them might get in trouble and you might win. But you're not going to play for Bob Marlin if you do that. You got a guy who's graduating almost 90% of his players. You've got two who have already graduated. You've got three more in May that are getting their degrees. And I'm sorry for those of you who are results-oriented, win-at-all-costs people. If you bring a kid into your program, and I don't give a damn what sport you're talking about, if your first priority isn't to prepare him for the rest of his life by having a degree in hand, male or female, then you're not doing your job. We've had coaches here before who didn't do their job. But we've got a guy here who's done his job as well as anybody. And there are people, oh, well, you're you know, Marlin this, Marlin that. I said, well, first of all, let me say this. I support all our coaches, and I'm going to support our coaches publicly until such time as they tell me they're no longer the coach or the administration tells me. But it's easy to support that man. And do I want to win more championships? Sure, everybody does. But I want to do it right. And this guy has done everything the right way. He has, you know, we've had one guy that I know of who got in trouble, got arrested. You never saw him again. And a lot of people, his name was never in the paper. It was never publicized. And a few people know who the name is, but most people don't. And there are a lot of people, if I gave you the name, you wouldn't know who he was. One guy in 13 years. And really got in trouble for something that maybe today is no big deal. All right? So I'm so happy for Coach because he's he would not compromise his values. And through that, he's won three championships, two tournament, one regular season. He's the second winningest coach in school history. He may wind up being the winningest coach, depending on how things go. But he's done it the right way. And for some people, that's not important. For me, as an old man who still thinks that the reason kids go to school is to get a degree, it's paramount. And I am so proud to be associated with that team because he does it right. And I'm so happy for him, maybe more than anybody else.
Absolutely. Forgot where I was going, but I I agree with you on Coach Martin. I think he's one of the best human beings that you will meet, and cares about his players, cares about the fans, and does it the right way. Jay, thank you for your time tonight, as always.
What are we drinking next?
We'll find out here shortly after we sign off. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But we will talk next week. We'll talk next week about some baseball, what happened this weekend.
Yeah, let's get together either Sunday night or early Monday, because I may be leaving town on Tuesday. I don't know.
So we've got a basketball tournament, and I think 6 o'clock Sunday. Is that 5 o'clock? Sunday's the
5 o'clock. 5 o'clock is the selection show. Yeah, I don't know yet where the team is going to be as we record this, but it's going to be somewhere.
Yep.
And you know what? The last time we won, it was in New Orleans, and I just got in the car and started driving home.
Yes.
And I didn't go to the selection thing, because they stayed in New Orleans and went to someplace, might have been walk-ons, I think, and saw the slide. I wasn't with them.
Yeah, well, I was there.
I'll be excited to be with them this time around. It's going to be great.
Good deal. Well, we'll be back next week.
Here's your baseball thing. High Point. This weekend, Sunday's game has been moved to 12 noon.
That is correct.
Just found that out today.
We found that out at the Diamond Club. That was moved to noon. That's to accommodate High Point flying out later that afternoon. So, softball heads to Florida. Baseball's home against High Point. Basketball is off till next week. We'll find out where they're playing on Sunday afternoon. So, great time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Jay Walker, voice of the Cajuns. You'll hear me exclusively on the We're Talking podcast. So,
yeah,
or podcast.
Pretty much.
So,
or podcast that I do myself.
Yes.
That you will not be a guest for.
Yes. Thank you.
All right, we're out of here.
Later.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.